you trying to pivot into or advance your career in the growing field of learning and development and struggling to envision your next role? Me too. I got your back. In this space, we'll be conducting job analysis style interviews with folks holding L&D and L&D adjacent roles in order for us to better clarify, classify, and envision the type of L&D work we want to do next. So come along this journey with me. I can't wait to survey the L&D landscape with you. Hey there, I'm your host, Abigail Wheeler-Charlew, and in today's episode, I sit down with my friend Steph Aping to analyze her role as co-founder and chief learning officer at Leadership & Co., a firm dedicated to preparing leaders to excel in today's complex business world. Steph's focus lies in cultivating the skill sets, nurturing a curious mindset, and amplifying the leadership impact of participants. In both her current position and her past role as a founding faculty member of CEB Garber's Leadership Academies, Steph has effectively led career-defining leadership development programs for leaders across a wide range of major industries in 25 different countries. Her unique blend of expertise in adult learning and diverse consulting experience enables her to bridge the worlds of theory and practical application. Steph holds a Bachelor of Science degree in History and Secondary Education, as well as a Master's of Science degree in Human Resource Management. And she's currently working on her doctoral dissertation in organizational management with a focus on Generation X leaders, which I didn't even know this, and we definitely would have talked about, but that's news to me and super awesome. Steph also volunteers across St. Louis. She holds a position as a cabinet member for the United Way of Greater St. Louis Women's Leadership Society and leads the Women's Mentoring Steering Committee. She's an advisory member for the Learning Performance Institute, LPI, and is an active member of the Organizational Development Network. Steph and I have such a fun conversation. A few things we unpack. Her love for imparting new knowledge and skills to learners in group settings. Critical skills for leaders today, which she outlined as collaboration, innovation, critical thinking, influencing, and leading change. Curiosity as a core mindset for leaders, learning to be curious about self, others, and the world. This is a fun one. Let's dive in. Hey, Steph, welcome to the Surveying the L&D Landscape podcast.
Hey, Gabby, it is really good to be here, and I appreciate the invite.
I'm really excited to chat with you today. I met you a couple of months ago here in St. Louis, and you've been a great friend, a supporter, an employer in some cases, and a mentor and a connector. So I love the work that you're doing with your company, and I'm excited to share that with the listeners today.
Yeah, thanks, Abby. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you. So it's been great to work together the couple of times that we've had the opportunity, and I would say you've been an amazing connector too. You've given me a lot in terms of making connections and in terms of the work that you've done. So hopefully we'll get a chance a little bit to talk about some of the work that we've done together.
Yes, absolutely. So Steph, what job are we analyzing today?
So I assume that we'll be analyzing the job that I'm currently doing, which is the co-founder and chief learning officer of Leadership & Co., which is a leadership development organization. I am responsible for, I still do a lot of delivery and development myself, but really making sure that I am putting forth the best content to ensure the work that we do.
Awesome. I'm super excited to chat about this. What previous experience have you held that prepared you for starting your own company and doing leadership development as a business?
I'm going to start with my education, and I promise not to go too far back, but I feel like my career has really come full circle. My undergraduate degree was in secondary education, so I had intended to be a high school social studies teacher. And never got any further than my student teaching. The summer after I graduated, I started with an HR consulting firm, just really as a part-time job, but immediately fell in love with the work that they were doing and started doing some HR consulting. And that led to a couple other roles in HR. It led to me becoming part of their corporate university. I worked for Aon at the time, and that's where I was completely hooked on development initiatives and programs, et cetera. And so, again, I've worked for several of the companies since, but that's really, I think, where I have found my passion really lies in teaching. And yeah, my students are now just a little bit older than they were or had intended to be when I was thinking about teaching high school.
Completely. Many of us come to this work from a variety of backgrounds, some of us from teaching and want to get into training or instructional design or facilitation or other aspects. But most of us all, you know, desire to help people develop skills and new knowledge and try something new and be kind of their whole selves, right? So many of us share that common passion.
You know, and Abby, I think we've even talked about this before, and it's one of the questions I've really been kind of noodling around for myself. And even as I talk to others who are in the L&D space, as you just suggested, there are so many different roles. And I think oftentimes we play a lot of those roles. I know I have, right? So I've been a trainer, I've been a facilitator, I've done some coaching, I do instructional design work, but they all are different roles. So again, I think that passion for development, I think oftentimes kind of the knowledge or even competencies or capabilities that are behind those roles are often kind of shared, but they are different in kind. And so it's been one of the questions that I've been asking myself, but I've also engaged in conversations with others around, what are you really passionate about? Those are different things. And I'll just use myself as an example. I like the group. So one-on-one coaching, I think it's interesting. I do enjoy it, but I really do find myself loving to be a teacher, which I see as a bit different than facilitation. Here's how I see it a bit different. Facilitation is almost like the answers in the room. You are facilitating conversation. It's almost like group coaching. You're trying to get the group to surface the answers in the room. And that feels like facilitation. Mm-hmm. I think my passion really is in teaching. So again, it kind of goes back to where I started my educational journey. I get a lot of energy. I find the most satisfaction for myself just in terms of my own career in giving new frameworks, in giving new knowledge, and imparting that to the group in front of me, then having them connect it to their own experiences or having to show up in my work. But I really do love that aspect of teaching.
Absolutely. And in this case, would you use teaching and training interchangeably?
That's a really good question, and one that maybe I haven't given as much thought to. I'm not sure. I think my answer immediately is yes. But I feel like there's nuances. I think about just some of the things when I conjure up training and development. Maybe that's the differentiation where maybe I see them a little bit differently. Like I think of myself, what I do in terms of development and teaching feels different than training. And I don't know why I'm saying this. And somebody could pressure test this, certainly. And I'd be happy to get into a conversation about how I see the differences or how I might be wrong. But in so many ways, training feels a little bit more like it's a workshop or it's a one and done, or it's the online, it's the on demand. It's the, a lot of the things that I think are going on in the L&D space right now feel like training. Like it's, I'm going and getting this thing. Development feels a little bit different. And that's what I do. I'm really in that field of taking someone through a learning journey. So I think that's my differentiation. That's not exactly the question I don't think you asked me, but I think that's how I differentiate.
Completely. I love it. I think we can try to define all of these roles for days, but at the end of the day, I think that it sounds good to me and helpful.
I'm not sure everybody'd want to hear that conversation, but I'm sort of geeking out with your L&D listeners. So for those that are really in this space, they'd be more interested in having that conversation, I think, than most of nature out there.
Hey, that's what this podcast is about, surveying the L&D landscape, right? So along those lines, we kind of outlined a few maybe functions or roles, maybe I should say roles within the L&D landscape. How else would you describe where the work that you do fits within the landscape?
It's interesting because I think I'm having to talk more about where we fit than I was probably pre-pandemic or just where we are today. And I say that there's never been a more exciting time to be in learning and development. I firmly believe that, and that is evidenced by the data. If you look at what CEOs, when you look at senior execs, what they're focused on right now, all the things that they can be focused on, right? Whether it be the, here we are in terms of economically and politically, in terms of even some of the global strife we're going through, in terms of things like AI. Right now, the number one concern of most executives that usually falls in the top concern, if not the top three concerns, is really, do we have the skills needed to run this organization tomorrow? And that falls on the shoulders of L&D. And so, again, it's never been a more cool time to be in the L&D space. So where do we fit in? I think one of the things, when I say, where do we fit in? I'm happy to talk about that more. It's interesting because I talk about skills-based. I talked about just-in-time. I talk about lots of on-demand learning. A lot of incorporating AI, you know, it's just in time learning. I'm getting it very personalized for what I need right now. And what we do is a little different from that. And we still believe in peer-to-peer learning. We still believe in people being in a room together and talking about the skills that they're learning today, how that fits with their work. And so again, the instructor-led, being in person as much as possible, although we still do lots of virtual deliveries or hybrid deliveries, we really still are primarily instructor-led. And so I believe that's still a need. And I know, again, evidenced by maybe not the buyers as much as the participants. So often you hear buyers making decisions based on, you know, the needs of the business, even the finances. So what do they have budget for? But what you hear from participants is often they want to be in a room together. They want a reason to be talking to their peers because they're getting access to their peers probably less than they were 5 years ago, just based on hybrid working.
So good. And part of the core of what you do in leadership development is focusing on the critical middle, right? I know that because I worked on your brochure.
Indeed you did. And it looks beautiful. So so happy to have you working on that with us. Yeah, so we call it the critical middle. And I'm glad you're saying that because I may have like moved on too quickly. And it really is our sweet spot. It is also what we do quite differently. And that is most organizations, depending on size, but in some form or sophistication, they have something for new managers. And again, that can vary in terms of scope and size and how deep they go. But usually when you're made a manager, you're given some sort of instruction on how we do coaching or performance management, that delegation, that type of management responsibility. And then most organizations have usually for executives. They're sending their executives off to an executive experience, or if they're big enough, they're bringing an organization who does that work in to work with them. And what Leadership & Go does is like we sit right in the middle, and you reference them. It's the critical middle. It is those managers, and in some cases, not managers. So we don't necessarily teach managerial skills because we feel like they've already gotten that. We really do teach leadership skills. So how do we think about leading others, whether or not they've got a direct reporting relationship to us or not? And so the bulk of our participants often have some sort of manager responsibilities, but in some cases not. We're all leading today. I would venture to say almost everybody in an organization is leading someone. So it might just be leading your peers, but you also might be leading project work. You might be leading an initiative. You might be leading client work or customer work. But again, that critical middle that falls somewhere in between is really where we spend our time. And they really are getting squeezed. Sorry, I'm going on and on, but this is where I spend most of my time. Actually, McKinsey's done an amazing job this year of talking about what that means. They're getting squeezed. So we've spent lots of time reading that research, and it really just, again, lends importance to the work that we've been doing for, you know, 5+ years now in terms of the power of the middle and just how critical that role is, but also how undervalued and just how squeezed they're becoming due to all of the pressures of the organization. So again, having to manage up and down and across.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure put on that critical middle. So their leadership development is vital. Or some may say critical.
You've done so good, Abby. You said critical and core. So kudos to you.
So Steph, tell me a little bit about your organization, the company that you founded, perhaps if it informs the way that you offer your services, you do the work.
Yeah, really, the way that Leadership & Co. came to be, I did, and the co-founders that founded Leadership & Co., we all work for a company called CEB. It was a research-based company for functional all areas. So looking at best practices in HR, IT, finance, R&D, et cetera, procurement, et cetera. And we developed a leadership academy for those specific functions. Over time, it sort of morphed into this, gosh, good leadership looks the same regardless of what function you're in. And I give that context because CEB was acquired by Gartner. Some of your listeners may have heard of Gartner. And Gartner decided that development wasn't really core to their business. And so they divested a few things that had IP associated with it. So something called the Challenger Sales or Effortless Experience for Customer Service. Leadership Academies, it wasn't really their IP. It was just good leadership hygiene. And so they really didn't, they didn't do anything with that. And so we picked it up and we evolved it. And I would like to say we enhanced it. That's where we came from. And so we founded that company, again, shortly after Gartner got out of that business. And really, again, had put our, certainly our own stamp on that, but it really sprung out of that. And I give you that background too, Abby, because we were contractors with CEB for that particular Leadership Academy business because of the ebb and flow of learning and development. They use a contractor model. And that's been a model that we have found successful. We enjoyed it ourselves in terms of being contractors, and we have continued to use that. And I think it's really lended itself to getting the right people at the right time for the right client. And I think we get really extremely good talent, if I'm super frank about it, probably talent we couldn't afford if we try to hire them full time. I might even use you as an example, Abby. Like, I've been so grateful to work with you and utilize your expertise at that right time when I needed it for a client. And I feel like that's often the case when I'm finding talent for any of our specific projects or any of our specific clients.
Yeah, that's so good. I think that that's really cool. And it takes someone who has an eye for talent, is a super connector, is able to plug and play the right opportunities with the right person at the right time. And, you know, our engagement was kind of case in point. You had someone come to you with a need to create a e-learning on creating a culture of psychological safety, which sounds really big, but really just means, you know, creating a culture of safety, trust, and respect and belonging, right? And I sat down with you, we connected over coffee, and I shared a little bit about my experience, and you were able, working in leadership development as an IO psychologist, and also with my time at a domestic violence sexual assault agency, training on healthy relationship skills and creating safe cultures. And you were able to pick up on that, and similar time, the universe brought you the right kind of client. And while it's not your bread and butter business, you said yes to it because you knew you could plug me in to work with you alongside of that. So I'm grateful for your talent and your ability. And I think that's a critical leadership skill, to be honest.
Well, thanks, Abby. And I absolutely did find you at the exact right time. So what's funny, it was almost like I met you and I don't know if my antenna was up, but it was only maybe weeks later that I had a conversation. I'm like, man, I've got the exact right person. So yeah, to that point, continue to work on projects, and I hope we've got more projects in the pipeline. I mean, specifically for you and I, but other ones too. And I think, thank you for saying that's a leadership quality. And it's one that I encourage every leader to think about. And I probably learned this early on in my career. I had a leader who had a business card, traditional contact information on one side. And on the back, it said something to the effect of always looking for good talent. Mm-hmm. Call me if you're interested or something like that. But he basically said, and he was a senior executive, he was like, I'm a recruiter. That's what I do. My job is to look for talent for this organization. I think that advice has stuck with me. And so, yeah, I continually think about who is the right folks, and not just here in St. Louis. I'm still building out my connections in St. Louis because I've worked outside of St. Louis so much, but we've got some incredible talent, especially L&D talent. I think we've got some really sophisticated organizations doing L&D work as a partner or vendor. And then we've got some really sophisticated work, I think, going on in St. Louis just within organizations. But a lot of my work is done outside of St. Louis, outside of the US even. So again, I am constantly just eyes and ears open, looking for talent wherever they may lurk around the globe.
So good. I love it. So Steph, if you had to divide your typical day or week into a series of major categories or buckets of activities, how would you define those?
I have a feeling that I'm starting to sound repetitive at this point, because I would say, as a founder and an entrepreneur, I would say a good portion of my week is these conversations that we've just referred to. It's talking with potential individuals. I rarely say no to a conversation, truly. And I say that even as I say, if your people find me on this podcast and they want to have a conversation, I likely will say yes. Because I'm just interested in hearing what people are doing. I think every time I either hang up the phone or walk out of a door, I often feel like I got more than I gave, for sure. But a good bulk of my time is doing that. It's having conversations with people who potentially are going to be those people I put on projects, or it's having conversations with prospects and clients and partners around work that they're doing in the L&D space. So that's probably number one. Number two is probably spent doing research. I spend a ton of time reading on the things that are important to leaders today. So what does leadership look like today? I have to keep my pulse, like my finger on the pulse of that. What organizations are doing to meet that need? What are the skills that are important? And so that's probably number two. So connecting with others is probably number one. Doing the research, doing the reading, that's connecting is number one. Doing the research is number two. And then a lot of my time is still in delivery. And I hope that doesn't ever change. I still love it. And being in the classroom, so to speak, whether that be virtual or in person, again, I am finding out what they need in their roles. I'm finding out what their challenges are. I'm finding out our content. Is it still working? How is it working? And so how is it relevant to their world? So that's probably number three, is I still do a lot of delivery, and I hope that doesn't ever change, because it's the part I love it all, but that's the part where, you know, I've got more energy at the end of the day. People always say, you must be exhausted. And I'm like, no, I'm more energized at the end of a session than I am at the beginning of the session, because I love it.
Awesome. Love that. And well, I know, because you also spend a little bit of time getting new business and putting together proposals, making those connections and going to conferences like the Learning Performance Institute in Europe, which is pretty cool. I wonder if we could spend some time on one of these buckets, perhaps the delivery piece, and really break down the activities and the approaches that you take to accomplish training, teaching, delivery.
Yeah, I took a couple notes on this. I actually wrote down, I think, some of the things that are critical in order to do that good delivery. And some of that delivery might mean some instructional design, which I do a lot of that work as well. So delivery is hard. I will say there's like the delivery in the moment, and then there's like what leads up to the delivery in terms of some of the instructional design, or in some cases, just working with the instructional designers. I know when I was with the leadership academies, I did some instructional design, but oftentimes I get things from instructional designers and I'm like, I have no idea how to do that exercise, or I know how to do it, but I don't want to do it. Like, that is not going to land. So I think there is that piece of it that I often think that symbiosis between instructional designers and the trainers or facilitators is so absolutely critical. And I've been part of too many teams where they're like sit in different camps and they have got to have a really close relationship. But the skills that I think are critical, these are what I wrote down. I wrote down business experience is key. I think there's something about playing some sort of role in the business. Or if you don't do that, you've got to get to know the business like really well. So it's conversations constantly with the people that you're teaching. So nobody should go into any room when they don't know a lot of the role that the person is doing. So I need to think on a project basis, right? You spend time with subject matter experts, but who are they spending time with? And so again, really thinking about who's the audience and whose context do you need? So some of that business experience, however you get it, I think is absolutely key. The second thing I wrote down is understanding how behavior change happens. So understanding how new habits are created. How do you get from you're learning something in the moment to I'm actually going to use this back on the job? And so to me, that delivery in the moment or the instructional design piece that goes on, like how are you creating moments that truly will lead to real behavior change and creating new habits, which sometimes requires undoing the learning before you get it to the point of new learning. The third thing I wrote down is flexibility, to be flexible in, again, delivery up to the point, listening to what your stakeholders really need and being flexible to adapt to what they need. But flexibility in the moment, I think, is critical. I've seen a lot of trainers and facilitators that get to the front of the room and are so rigid about, we've got to accomplish this. We've got my learning objectives. I've got my timing. And the room's not with you, or the room needs something else in the moment. So being flexible and really seeing what's happening in front of you, I think, is critical. The fourth thing I wrote down is influence. And this is my last one. I think we got to know how to sell it. I think there's a lot of people who are in L&D who have not had a lot of sales background. I'm one of those, constantly learning how to sell, constantly thinking about how to better persuade and influence. But I think this discipline in marketing, and Abby, I'm looking at you because I know you've got some great background in this. I think the discipline of marketing and L&D have got to come together in a way that they haven't specifically, or just starting to. I think there's some organizations that are doing it well, but the days of thinking that we're just going to build programs and tell you you have to come, I think those days are over. And so how do we market it? How do we sell our programs? How do we make sure that people understand what's it for me if they were to come in whatever kind of training or learning that you've charted for them?
So good. So many good skills and just insights that you've outlined here. Yes, we have to know the business. Yes, we have to be flexible. We have to think about behavior change. We have to work well with the instructional design and delivery, like all of the things that happen, and even our SMEs, right? We have to be able to influence and get people in our programs. They have to know about it. No matter who your audience is, you're selling to somebody. You're convincing them that this thing is worth doing. There's something in it for them. They're going to take some critical skills, behavior change, or something transformational out of this experience, and it's worth their time and effort.
100%. And actually, I'm going to play on something you just said. You said, you got to get them to come to the training. And I said that too, right? So you got to get them to show up. But then you actually have to get them to stay engaged while they're there. So you have to continue to influence them. And then you have to be able to leverage them like we should be doing to tell others about how great it is what we've done. And so again, whether that be going back and teaching others what they've already learned, whether that be just convincing them that they should sign up for the program or the training or whatever it is. And so again, I think lots of those tools, techniques, tricks, et cetera, that marketers have used, I think we have to think of ourselves as salespeople. I think we have to think of ourselves as marketers. I think in order to design, develop, deliver the right kind of programs, I think we need to shift our mindset.
Completely. Steph, could you describe one project or perhaps learning experience that you've worked on in your role that you felt was impactful and what you learned from it?
You know what? I'm going to use really like recency effect. I'm going to talk about something that I'm currently doing. So I'm still learning. I'm intrigued. I'm curious. I'm also mildly suspicious of all things AI. I think the potential is going to be huge. I think, it, you know, 3 to 5 years from now, we're all going to be using it like we do the internet, right? Like you can't do your job without it, but it doesn't do your whole job. And that's, I continue to like really see it as kind of, you know, pre-internet days or early internet days, which I know you're way too young to remember, but I remember well days before internet. So I really think about that. And I've had some really interesting conversations. I don't see Leadership & Co. moving away from, we are instructor-based, peer-based learning journeys. That's what we do. And I'm really passionately in that. But I'm curious how AI could play a role in keeping the learning sticky after the training. And so like digital nudges, what will that look like? And are there digital nudges that can show up in your day-to-day? So like it sees that I've got a meeting on my calendar and there's some sort of nudge asking me if I've thought about their communication style or if I've thought about what motivates their behavior to better be able to influence them or if I've thought about curious questions to ask them in the meeting. So all of these things related to the skills they learn in the program. That would be so cool. So that's something I give some thought to. I had a recent conversation with someone who's developed software that looks at coaching conversations and analyzes, you have to be on there like almost like a Zoom platform, but it's analyzing the questions that you ask, it's analyzing the answers, it's looking at your kind of talk to listening ratio. So I think about the same thing. What shows up after the learning? Is there, we use peer coaches. So how could that relationship continue to evolve and grow and even continue to better coach each other after the learning experience is over.
Yes. So how we leverage AI, perhaps in this case, not to transform the work we're doing, but to help us get something done after the fact. And to, I like what you said, make it more sticky, right? How do we make learning stick? It goes beyond the workshop, beyond the time that we have together, because that's where behavior change really happens. Otherwise, it goes away. We forget about it, right?
That's right. And so, and a lot of what we've done to this point has been just one directional. It, you know, we're reminding them of what they said they were, you know, their learning commitments, or we're reminding them of a tool. But it would be so cool if it really is a kind of AI generated or something. We're all using the term AI. I don't even know that it has to be AI, but mm-hmm. it would be very cool if it showed up in a way that actually makes the learner really engage in something. I don't mean a game. I don't necessarily mean just a reflection. I mean actual work. And so, again, I don't have the answer, but it's certainly something that I continue to work on. I continue to talk to vendors. I continue to talk to people who know more about the space than I do, and just continue to think about how do we evolve this in terms of that after the program experience, during the program and after the program experience.
Awesome. So we talked a little bit already about some critical skills to do the type of work that you do. I wonder if we can outline some what Leadership & Co. identifies as the key skills, abilities, personal characteristics, or competencies, right, required to be a leader, or that's helpful to be a leader. I don't know if required is the right word.
Yeah, well, and I would say required. And it's funny because we, every time I turn around, we're trying to call them something else, whether, you know, we've abandoned, I think, soft skills, thank goodness. But it's, you know, is it the core skills? Is it the essential skills? Is it this leadership skills? Whatever we're calling it today. I like the word requirements because I do think they are required to be a good leader. Depending on the type of work that you're doing, I think they're always required. How much you need of one versus the other may vary just dependent on the work that you do. But we do use research around leadership today and leadership of tomorrow. So, you know, I'm constantly reading, like I said, it's, whether it's the McKinsey, whether it's the World Economic Forum that does a lot of good work in terms of leadership skills and competencies of tomorrow. But even some of our competitors, what are they doing? And, you know, if I see a skill that they're teaching and I'm thinking that you know, well, we don't have anything for that, is that really a critical skill? Again, it's going to sound a bit like a sales pitch and it's not meant to, but our program is really designed around those essential skills. The mindset that runs throughout our program is curiosity. And there's such good, solid research on just how important curiosity is in the world today. As a matter of fact, LinkedIn just published something the other day that said there's been an increase of 90%+ in the word curiosity in job postings. And so, but what does that mean? I mean, it could become just a buzzword, but we really do think when we talk about curiosity, we talk about three types of curiosity. It's about curiosity of self. It's about curiosity of others and their experiences. And then it's about almost like intellectual curiosity. So what's going on in the world around you? So again, self is really that self-awareness, which we know is key for a leader. Curious about others, so that whole kind of empathy, having good conversations, really understanding what's going on with the other person or persons around you. And then again, just that broader kind of curiosity, which could lead to problem solving, which could be around just finding new information, et cetera. And so again, that's the mindset that runs through. And we've got three different sessions that we teach. The first is all about collaboration. Some of that is self-reflection and collaboration. The third session is all about, we call it innovator, but I would say it's about innovation, but also critical thinking. So it's about thinking about our business, outside our business, whatever the problems with our organization and our team, and then how do we do some innovative solutions around that. And then finally, our third session, this probably won't surprise you based on an answer I gave earlier, it is persuasion. We are all having to influence each other and lead each other through change. And so that third session that we do is really about how can we influence others around us and how can we help them through navigating this thing that we're all experiencing all of the time, and that is change. And if leaders can't lead others through change right now, Again, it's a requirement. I'll use the word requirement that we said earlier.
Completely. Oh, those are so good. Small side note, but I've grown up in a youth leadership development organization called HOBE, mentioned a few times on my podcast, but it's been a while. And our curriculum is built around the social change model of leadership, which first looks at personal leadership. That's that self-awareness piece. Then moves to group leadership. That's that empathy and collaboration piece. And then it moves to societal leadership. What are the issues, things in our world that are happening? How can we take action towards meaningful, positive social change and align our strengths and our skills with the strengths and skills of others and move people to action to, again, create positive social change? So the way you've described everything, but based in curiosity, I think is really, I want to say critical, maybe a little bit innovative, but because I can see those, you know, personal group, societal connection points, it's just true, right? When we see those things happen all around us and come in different ways, people have a different spin to it, but there's a really important truth to it, I think.
Well said, Abby. And again, I don't think what we've done is revolutionary. We probably just packaged it around curiosity. But it's interesting to think, hear you say that. So I was even reflecting on, you know, whether or not curiosity resonates with them. I think initially it's sort of like, I'm curious. And I think they realize once we get into it, I'm not curious enough, right? And I think it's just a product of being busy. Or in some cases, it's just like we get siloed, you know, it's heads down getting work done. And we realize like we haven't done enough reflecting around ourselves, but we don't do enough time like just thinking about how am I thinking? What are my thoughts? What do those thoughts mean? Kind of same thing as we think about teaching things like empathy. It's all about just being curious about what's going on with that other person.
Right.
So I could use a few of the other, like, I don't want to call them buzzwords because they're not. I mean, empathy is important. It will always be important. Heard the word empathy. Brené Brown, over the last couple of years, probably more than we ever have. But it's exactly as you said, it's curiosity and it's genuine curiosity about those that are around you. And as a leader today, like you have to show up that way. You absolutely have to show up that way. But I think when you say to someone, it's just being curious about others, that feels easy because what does that look like? It means asking really interesting questions. And then it means really listening to what is being said around you. And again, same thing. It's asking ourselves really kind of meaningful questions and then really listening or digging for those answers within ourselves. And then again, using kind of like you said, societal, or for us, you know, it's organizational. Mm-hmm. It's lifting your head up from your desk and saying there's a whole enterprise out there, or there's things going on in my industry, or there's things going on in my geography that I'm just not paying attention to. And so again, and it's because it's just a product of heads down, do the work, you're busy. But as a leader, like we've got to remind people, like your job is to pick your head up and see the changes coming or have the deeper conversations. And people just recognize, I'm not doing that as much as I should. So I do. I like the packaging of curiosity. I think it helps people see like it's a tangible thing that they can do.
And it's deep. What is going on with me? What's really going on with me in this moment? I have to take some breaths. I have to really like reflect. What am I feeling? What am I thinking? What am I assuming right now? Right? How does that impact the way that I'm showing up in this moment and the way that I'm interpreting other people's actions? Right? And it's just so layered. So I love, love, love framing all of it in the idea of real, true curiosity. What's going on with me? What's going on with others? What's going on here in my organization or in my community, here in the world around me, right?
And I think, and you're opening Pandora's box for me, because you know I could go on and on now talking about curiosity, but I think that's it. It's genuine wonder. And I think if you can get people to see, like, I'm just genuinely curious, like even that if you frame it that way, to say, I'm just genuinely curious, like genuinely. It's, we often say find your five-year-old self, right? Anybody who's been around like kind of that 5 or 6 year old where their wonder runs, they're just insatiably like, there's no judgment and there's no preconceived answer to it. They're just genuinely like, why does that happen? Or why do you think that? Or why are you feeling that way? Now, I'm careful to say we teach people why can be a not good way to ask questions because it does feel like you've got some judgment now that we're adults. So we do teach people that why is not necessarily the best way to lead a conversation, but it does show that genuine curiosity. And so I think if we could all just be more genuinely curious and know that it's coming from a non-judgmental, I think it puts us in a safe space. I think we'd have a lot more civilized conversations if we didn't have kind of all that bias and baggage, and if we were really genuinely asking each other questions because we were really interested to know.
So good. And it brings us back to the work that we did in our e-learning course on creating psychological safety. We literally did that same thing. Ask people to pause and stop when there's difficult conversations and ask those questions. What's going on for me? What's going on for this other person? What's going on in our environment or our team or our organization? So anyway, we could talk for so long about this topic because you and I are, we love this kind of things. I won't use the word nerds, although it's okay to be a nerd, but you know, we just love it and it's great.
Yeah, I nerd out. I can totally nerd out on this subject for sure.
Yeah. Oh, Steph, this has been so fun having this conversation and learning more about the work that you do, the methodologies that your work is grounded in, and the passion you clearly have for this work. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing with us.
Well, you know, it's my pleasure. First of all, it's my pleasure just to chat with you, as it always is, Abby. But it's my pleasure, too, to share it with those who are listening. And I really do encourage anyone to reach out to me. So whether it be to nerd out on curiosity or to learn more or for me to make connections, I am absolutely happy to do that.
Yeah, so good. So good. And Steph is a super connector. So I went to a workshop that she gave on being a super connector. And that's a part of being a leader, too. Right. And I think one of your greatest leadership strengths, although there are many.
Well, and it's learned. I think, Abby, you heard me. I won't tell the story right now, but you've heard me tell. I learned it the hard way. Being a super connector, learning to network is absolutely a skill. And it's a skill we teach in our program.
So, so good. As we come to a close, let's run through a few rapid fire questions. How do you continue to develop yourself professionally within your role?
Read, talk. Meet people, read stuff. Even if you think it's not connected to what you're doing, read it, talk to them anyway. At some point, you'll see it kind of come full circle. You'll make connections.
So good. How would you describe the current landscape of learning and development? And what do you think is on the horizon?
Well, again, I'll go back to just never been a more exciting time. I will just be super interested to see, you know, there's a lot to talk about. And I won't say the AI thing, but the whole idea that it's going to be really skill-based, I think it's fascinating. So less role-based, more skill-based. And I'm really interested to see how that will change and evolve the work that I think that we've all been doing for years. I think that will change the way that we're all having to think about programs and initiatives. And yeah, I'll be really interested to see where kind of this skill-based trajectory takes us.
100%. Couldn't agree with you more. As we come to a close, what's one piece of advice that you would like to share with folks as they're trying to pivot into or navigate their career within the L&D landscape?
Talk to the people that are doing the work that you want to do. I think sometimes you think it's cool, then you talk to them, you find out maybe it's not as cool as you thought, or talk to them and you find out this is exactly what I was supposed to do. So, but I also would even say that. Try different things. You know, L&D, just L&D is a really big world. And I think when you can vary your experiences, I do think the future of work will be lots of varied experiences versus like being in one place and going super deep in that area. And so, again, I'd even look at my own career, not that I've done it all right, but like having the consulting background and then doing HR. Again, it's all been in the same discipline, but it has been different enough that it has allowed me to, I think, be really varied in terms of the things that led me here. So I think find different roles. I really do believe that will be the future of careers, particularly in L&D.
Such good advice. Thank you, Steph, once again. Such a pleasure to connect with you, be your friend, and learn from you. And I appreciate you being here today.
Yeah, right back at you. Thanks, Abby, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. What a treat to have my friend, Steph. I really enjoyed that conversation. If you have those super connectors in your world, in your sphere, I recommend you go get connected to them, be a super connector. Steph has definitely been a super connector for me and begun opening doors for me over the last 6 months that I've known her. I recommend you go get a Steph Oping in your corner. I'm sure she'd be happy to be your Steph Oping or introduce you to somebody else that can be that for you too. We can all use a little bit more connections and curiosity in our life. Let's stay curious. If you found value in today's episode, please rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast. I'd be so grateful. I'll see you next week as we survey our next job in the L&D landscape.